Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. The Manhattan Project National Historical Park was formally established last year, and plans are underway to create facilities in Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Hanford, Washington. The idea is to tell the stories behind the creation of the first atomic bomb, but critics worry the new park could glorify or gloss over controversial issues, such as using the weapons on Japan and the impacts on communities from nuclear weapons testing. How will the story of creating the atomic bomb be told in this new park? What does it mean to have these sites under the banner of the National Park Service? Whose voices do you think should be included? Join our conversation by calling 277-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org. We're joined on the phone by Tracy Atkins. She is the interim superintendent for the New Manhattan Project National Okay. Tracy Atkins will be joining us in just a moment. So here in the studio, I am joined by Heather McClenahan. She is director of the Los Alamos Historical Society. Thank you for joining us, Heather.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming down from the Hill for the morning. And Heather, your staff are actually helping the National Park Contact Station right now. Are you seeing more visitors coming to the National Park since it was established, coming to Los Alamos?
We are. And it's actually a little bit shocking for us because when the park was first passed by Congress, we anticipated a 3 to 5 year startup period, and we haven't had that. We've had a 3 to 5 month startup period. And so we are having visitors come. You know, once you put that arrowhead on something, it gets attention. And so people are coming. They're getting their park stamps in the visitor contact station in Los Alamos. They're interested in visiting the other sites in Hanford and Oak Ridge. And there's just a lot of interest in this sort of kind of unknown secretive history about the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, what are people saying when they're coming in? Why are they coming to Los Alamos?
Well, you know, obviously our museum's been in place for almost 50 years, and we've had people coming all that time. It's just we're starting to see a larger, more widespread audience. And it's people who are interested in learning about the history, people who may know something about the Manhattan Project, may have read about it, may have had a grandfather or an uncle who had some affiliation with it, because, you know, if you look at Alex Wellerstein's numbers, he's a historian who does a lot of work on nuclear secrecy. He has a great blog called the Nuclear Secrecy Blog, and he estimates that something upwards of 600,000 people actually across the nation had some small part in the project. And so when you start to think about that many people, and then all of their nieces and nephews, pretty much everybody's uncle ended up working on the project if they were, in the United States still, not overseas fighting. So we do have a lot of interest, and with people not really knowing a lot about what the Manhattan Project was, but wanting to come and learn.
We have on the line Tracy Atkins. She is the interim superintendent for this new Manhattan Project National Historical Park. She joins us from her office in Denver. We'll also be joined shortly by Senator Martin Heinrich. He and Senator Tom Udall introduced the original legislation to create the park. Tracy Atkins, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Megan. So I should say that I am the former interim superintendent. We have a new interim superintendent, Charlie McFadden, who is also the permanent superintendent up at Fort Union, so not too far from Los Alamos. But Charlie's on vacation this week, so I'm going to cover for him. I've been involved with the Manhattan Project National Historical Park since January of 2015, when we started working on the memorandum of agreement between the Department of Energy and the Park Service on how we were going to run this partnership park. That effort included visits to all three of the communities during that MOA process. And then we were able to engage both secretaries, the Secretary of Energy and the Secretary of Interior, to ultimately sign that agreement at a ceremony in Washington, D.C. Last November. Also that week, we had a scholars forum, which included 20 subject matter experts, including two from Japan, local experts from each of the communities on things like military history, social history, environmental advocates. So that information from the scholars forum really supported interpretive theme development that we've been working on since the park was established, and that's moving forward.
And I've put a link to that report from the
Great.
Scholars Forum on our show, on the Call-In Show webpage, so you can check that out. And those, some of the themes that they talked about, talk a little bit about that, Tracy, because they looked at a number of things, the larger themes, and talk about how that will inform what's going to happen as this park
evolves. Absolutely. So the Scholars Forum looked at a number of different areas, obviously, you know, big science and technology and, you know, different ways that both the military and industry and, you know, average citizens came together.
Actually, Tracy, I hate to interrupt you. We have Senator Heinrich, and he stepped out of a committee meeting, so he doesn't have a lot of time. So let me jump to him real quick. Senator Heinrich, are you with us?
I am, and I just want to start out and say thank you for covering this important piece of our history.
Why did you advance this legislation with Senator Udall? Why help create a national park dedicated to the history of creating the atomic bomb?
It's an enormous part of our history for New Mexico, but also for the nation, and it's also a complicated one. And I'm a big believer in the Park Service's ability to take these really complex, difficult stories and interpret them in a way that really doesn't gloss over any of the hard parts. I love the history of what happened at Los Alamos, but we all recognize the incredible loss in Japan when these weapons were actually used. And it's a, you know, it's a warning to all of us in the world today, and especially those in government, about the terrible power of these weapons when they're used. And so having that conversation and making sure that new generations don't take that for granted, that they understand what all happened during World War II and since then, I think it's very, very important.
Was there significant funding attached to this bill for the park?
The funding for the National Park Service moves separately because it moves every year through the Appropriations Subcommittee, Subcommittee on Parks, and Interior, which Senator Udall actually sits on. And so we will be fighting to make sure that this receives adequate funding and that we coordinate with the other communities that are involved in this park, too, because it's fairly unique in that it has this Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, Hanford three-site structure.
Now, the National Park Service is already facing something like $12 billion in deferred maintenance at its existing parks. So what kind of hurdles do you see in getting a new park like this on firm footing?
Well, it's been a challenge for not only this park, but also for Valles Caldera, which is right next door. At the same time, there's just enormous demand in the community for these parks. And I think we would make a mistake if we said, because we're not doing a good enough job funding the backlog right now in the face of sequestration and the budget challenges we've had, that we're going to turn our back on our natural wonders and our history. We had a moment in time where we could get these parks through, and I think it was very important that we seized that moment, and I think history will look back and say, thank goodness they did this, even though they faced enormous challenges. When you look back at when some of our other parks were created, during wartime, even Yellowstone being created around the Civil War, these were not easy times for people to look into the future, and fortunately, these communities did.
Now, I want to circle back to what you were talking about, the National Park Service and exploring a complex history. What do you say to people who feel that we shouldn't use perhaps the respected banner of the National Park Service to explore a subject that it continues to be very controversial?
I don't think there's any more qualified in the world to interpret and to all the different sides of it. Are there? Am I losing you?
Oh, we dropped out for a minute. You're there. I'm sorry. Keep going, Senator.
I just don't think anyone does that better. And as someone, you know, this is a complicated story for me. My father's an atomic veteran. He's very proud of what he did in the South Pacific in the 1950s. At the same time, you know, he's had a couple bouts of cancer that were directly related to that work. I think everybody recognizes that this is a complicated history. That shouldn't be an excuse for not telling our history.
Okay. Senator Heinrich, I know you are stepping out of a meeting about funding for wildfires, so we know that's important. We'll let you go. We thank you for taking a few minutes to call in today.
Thanks for having this discussion. Nobody does this better than KUNM.
Well, thank you, Senator Heinrich.
Take care.
I just want to remind you, this is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about the creation of the Manhattan Project National Historical Park. Would you visit a national park focused on the creation of the atomic bomb? And what do you want to see covered about that history? Join our conversation by calling 277-5866 or email callinshow at KUNM.org. Tracy Atkins, interim superintendent for the new park. Well, just recently stepped down interim superintendent, but I want to pick up our conversation. We were talking about you. There was a scholars forum last fall, a document that you're using, I believe, to create a foundation document for the park. Talk about that.
Sure. So the National Park Service has a goal to create a foundation document for all 411 park units. And we are on track to do that as part of our centennial effort, and we're also doing that for the Manhattan Project. So those foundation documents include the purpose of the park, so why it was created by Congress or presidential proclamation, what's significant about it, so why it is either nationally or, in this case, globally significant, what are the fundamental resources that if they went away, we couldn't meet the purpose and significance of the park. And then also the interpretive theme. So what are those important messages that we want to tell about the purpose, significance, and important resources? So that Scholars Forum fed into our interpretive theme effort, as well as identifying some of those important resources. We also had meetings in each of the three communities where we worked on that foundation document, and included public open houses where we had between 50 and 200 and something people in each community that showed up and gave, and we asked specific questions that related to those aspects of the foundation document. So that also fed into our interpretive workshop, and we have draft interpretive themes that we're still refining, but we expect to be able to share more formally with the public later this year. But those themes start with topics like dealing with the displacement and sacrifice that people made for this wartime effort, the secret cities that were created as part of that, and the extraordinary lengths people went to protect their future. There's a theme that talks about the science and engineering that supported the atomic weapon and the technological innovation and collaboration that went along with that, and how we can use that as an example to provide insight to solving today's complex problems. We talk about the context of World War II and the many very complex decisions that led to the use of nuclear weapons, and, you know, brings us to thinking about the challenges of that's created today, you know, going right into South Korea and Iran. We also talk about how the nuclear age changed the world and provokes consideration of the scientific and technological advances, but also the human cost and the environmental consequences.
What is the official opening took place last fall, but this is just the beginning. So what's in place now and what's envisioned for the future?
Sure. So currently in Hanford, Washington, you can go on a tour of the B reactor, which is a National Historic Landmark, and that was the first production scale plutonium reactor. And you can also tour some pre-Manhattan sites that kind of go to that earlier history. At Oak Ridge, there are, and both of these in Hanford and Oak Ridge kind of run March or April through November. And you can sign up online at Oak Ridge. You can tour the X-10 graphite reactor, which was sort of the semi-works for that B reactor at Hanford. You can tour the Y-12 Hope Center. All this is on buses because it's, you know, behind the DOE fence. We have visitor contact stations in each of the three cities. And then in Los Alamos, we have a visitor contact station that is right on Ashley Pond, which was one of the first technical area for the Los Alamos part of the project. It's staffed by, we share the space with the Historic Society. Heather was on just a few minutes ago. So with her volunteers and park rangers, starting July 1st, we'll have a ranger program at, I believe, 1 o'clock every day at the pavilion there at the Ashley Pond. And then we have a brochure and a walking tour that includes the historic district in downtown Los Alamos that has connections to the Manhattan Project, including Fuller Lodge, which was part of the Los Alamos Boys School, and homes where individuals like Robert Oppenheimer and Nobel laureate Hans Benthe lived. So, and then also, once the Historic Society Museum reopens, that also tells a piece of the Manhattan Project story, as well as the Bradbury Museum.
Thank you. And this is the KUNM Call-In Show. We will be right back.
Program support comes from Slate Stern, trial lawyer providing personal injury and commercial litigation in New Mexico since 1994. Slate Stern believes that every client matters. More information at slatestern.com.
Support comes from the International Folk Art Alliance, presenting the 13th Annual International Folk Art Market Santa Fe, July 8th through 10th. Featuring over 180 master folk artists from around the world. Tickets at folkartalliance.org.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Leslie Shore, author of Listen to Succeed. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how to identify and overcome barriers to effective listening.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about the Manhattan Project National Historical Park. It was formally established last year, and plans are underway to create facilities in Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Hanford, Washington. We just heard from Tracy Atkins, the park's interim superintendent. She's based in Denver. We also have Heather McClanahan here with the Los Alamos Historical Society. What do you think about the idea of a national park focused on the atomic bomb? Will it inform and educate? Will it promote dialogue? Join the conversation by calling 277-5866 or email callinshow at kunm.org. You can also follow the conversation on Twitter at KUNM News. We have a caller from Albuquerque. Barbara, you're on the line. What is your question or comment?
So I'm wondering if in the programmatic process of this project, if there is going to be any critique of this. I mean, if you go to the National Atomic Museum in Albuquerque, there's no critique whatsoever. They say they don't have an editorial position, but they do. And it doesn't include any sort of critique of nuclear power, nuclear weapons, et cetera. And I'm calling because I'm curious about whether or not this is going to be tolerated. I mean, you know, Hanford is completely contaminated beyond belief. I can't believe they're actually doing tours of the place. Anyway, that's my question.
Okay. Tracy Atkins, could you address that question?
Sure. You know, I think that our intent is to provide multiple perspectives. And, you know, obviously, you know, if we, you know, the Park Service does best when we really do think hard about how we tell stories. If we look back, you know, 20 years ago, talking about the Civil War, we talked about generals and troop movements, and we didn't talk about the societal impacts or even why we were really fighting the war, i.e. slavery. Leading into the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, we took a hard look at that interpretation, brought together subject matter experts, and really changed that dialogue and the programming around the Civil War, and talked about slavery, talked about the impact on the communities and societies around where those battles took place, and really expanded that story and, you know, told some of those more challenging and difficult parts of our country's history. A few years later, we did a similar effort leading into the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Movement, and really talked about the arc of history from the Civil War through Reconstruction to civil rights. And that's the same type of approach that we are taking with the Manhattan Project. So we will talk about certainly the scientific accomplishments, but we'll talk about, you know, we will have input from people in Japan. We had two Japanese scholars, one who was a former diplomat and is chair of the Hiroshima Peace Culture Foundation, and another who's a medical doctor who studied the impact of radiation on human health. Those are the kind of perspectives that we will include as we tell the story of the Manhattan Project.
We are also joined today by Greg Mello. He's with the Los Alamos Study Group. Greg, your organization opposes the creation of this park, and you're concerned that, despite what we just heard from Tracy, this will not be an objective view of history. Why?
Well, it really can't be an objective view. It starts out with the enabling legislation calling the Manhattan Project a great achievement, one of the greatest achievements of the 20th century. And that divorce of greatness from goodness is actually very dangerous. And what that ends up really meaning is greatness inheres in unleashing power, unleashing destructive power. So that's a kind of a idea that I think is dangerous in and of itself. The United States is very much still involved in the Manhattan Project, very much still involved in threatening other countries with nuclear weapons. And this is not something that is behind us, like the Civil War or the internment of the Japanese Americans in World War II. This is an active process. $1 trillion is being invested in new nuclear weapons, and a lot of it is happening in Los Alamos. So the ability of the National Park Service to overcome the tremendous company town pressures, the corporate pressures, in fact, Senator Heinrich can't begin to overcome them himself. He is a supporter of these weapon systems. He was, as a congressman, the most emphatically pro-nuclear weapon congressman on the Democratic Party. So I don't think that objectivity is something that will be achieved, and I think it's baked in the cake from the beginning. All this talk about complexity, and that's a kind of a giveaway. There's really nothing complex about harnessing hundreds of thousands of people to produce a weapon of mass destruction and incinerate cities with it. We can't just defer the meaning of that by saying it's complex, it's not that complex. It was a war crime then. It would be a war crime today.
Heather, you've been working with the Los Alamos Historical Society, and you sort of, in the absence of not having a national park, you guys have really been sort of the main carrier of the history in Los Alamos, the whole, not just the Manhattan Project, but
right,
all the history.
So
what is your reaction to Greg's comments in terms of whether this can be objective?
Well, I think, you know, Greg and I have a fundamental disagreement on multiple perspectives about the atomic bomb. And the fact of the matter is that there were tens of thousands of men who were on their way to invade Japan. Whether we would have had to or not is a counterfactual that we can never prove in history. But we do know that those men all have a story. They are ships turned around. They're trains that were taking them from the European theater to the Pacific theater stopped because the war was over. The Emperor of Japan said, "I ended this because of these horrible weapons." So there is a perspective out there that it did bring the war to an end, that it stopped the killing that had been going on. There is also a perspective that we have not had another world war. World War I and World War II were 20 years apart. And how many millions died in World War I? Over 60 million died in World War II. We've never had that kind of destruction again. So there's another side to this that does make it complex. And yes, it was horrible what happened in Japan, but it did bring the end of the war. And it also, the other side of the story is that maybe fewer people died because of that.
Okay. Of course, we disagree about that.
Yes, we do.
So Tracy, you were hearing already, this is a kind of fundamental disagreement here that persists about this. How does the National Park Service enter this? What do you bring to perhaps bring dialogue or highlight some of these complexities?
Well, I think our purpose is to help understand the Manhattan Project and its legacy. I mean, that's in the legislation. So that guides us. We also will, you know, share multiple perspectives. We will not have, you know, one storyline. And, you know, we will not, and the story doesn't stop with the dropping of the bomb. We have to talk about the impact to Japan. We have to talk about the health impacts and the environmental consequences of that, both development and testing and use of the bomb, as well as, the challenges of the science and technology that led into it. We may not get everything right the very first, time out the chute, but we will continue to refine it. We will work with the communities and other scholars and ensure that we continue to have a dialogue around these stories and the implication of the Manhattan Project.
I want to go to a caller. We have Tom in Albuquerque. Tom, what is your question or comment today?
Hi, Megan. Thanks for the dialogue, but mostly what we've heard this morning is propaganda. And the propaganda begins on the Manhattan Project National Historical Park website, where they say this site tells the story about the people, events, science, and engineering that led to the creation of the atomic bomb, which helped end World War II. That's 70 years since, nearly, and we're still getting propaganda, which has been dismissed not only by Freedom of Information Act, but by scholars and President Dwight D. Eisenhower with regards to the bomb did not end World War II. Propaganda from Martin Heinrich, who, if he had a shred of moral fiber, would resign his seat because he's not serving the people of New Mexico. He's a toady for the war profiteers who are serving the Air Force junta that thinks we need to spend $1 trillion retooling their faults. Nuclear rearmament program just to keep the labs, and now UNM, our institution of higher learning,
okay.
is on board with that boondoggle to manage Sandia Labs.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate you calling in. Thank you very much. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick, and we're talking about the Manhattan Project National Historical Park that was formally established last year in Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Hanford, Washington. You can call 277-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org to join the conversation. I want to take another call. I want to go to Tom in Santa Fe. Tom, what is your question or comment?
My comment is just the fact that the B-36 program in SAC, the Air Force, for 11 years, there was these 365 built B-36 bombers that were the nuclear deterrent bombers. Between the time frame of the B-29 after the World War II and the B-52 that took over after the B-36 program, that program is not there. Can't find it anywhere on history. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, appreciate it, Tom. The development of the atomic bomb was followed by testing throughout the West and the Pacific, but that very first test took place at what is now called the Trinity Site in southern New Mexico. And joining us is Tina Cordova. She's with the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Association. It's made up of people and their descendants who lived near the site of the world's first atomic blast. And to that point about what is or is not included, Tina, last year you told our reporter Marisa DeMarco that New Mexicans were unwitting participants in the world's largest science project and then forgotten. Can you talk about that?
That's correct. I say that the people, living in and around the Trinity site were enlisted in this process. They were unknowing, unwilling, uncompensated, innocent, taxpaying victims of the first atomic bomb. And we continue to live with that legacy today. And I represent the people like the mother who called me this week, from La Luz, New Mexico, probably about 40 miles away, the crow flies, who has a 14-year-old son with an extremely rare lymphoma. And all the others that I hear from, and I always say, just when I think I've heard the worst story, I hear one worse than that. And so we deal with the legacy of the bomb every day. It's part of our everyday lives.
Now, people near Trinity have never been part of the large federal compensation program that other people got who lived near atomic blast sites. What have you learned about your own efforts to survey people? Because you've taken that on since it hasn't really been done.
Exactly. Yeah, there was a fund set up in 1990 called the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act that has been extending compensation to the people downwind of the Nevada test site for 26 years now. And although New Mexicans were the very first downwinders any place in the world, we've never been included. The hard facts are that that fund has paid out over $2 billion in claims, and that's a large amount of money and would have huge impact in New Mexico, but that's not the most important part. The most important part is those people get a health care coverage card that entitles them to the very best health care that's available out there. No co-payments, no premiums, no questions asked. And New Mexico, in New Mexico, that would mean the difference between life and death for some people. We have been left out. It's beyond imagination why. We have lots of people who are sick in these communities, and right now we're conducting a health impact assessment, and we are accumulating health surveys. I receive 2 to 10 every day in the mail. We have well over 1,000 of those health surveys. We're surveying two primary counties, Otero and Socorro County. And people are coming out in droves to support what we're doing. We're hoping that at the end of all this, we'll have an expert review those health surveys and tell us what our findings are. And then we'll write a paper. We think it'll be really hard to dismiss what we find. It's unfortunate that we have to rise to this level of proof because nobody living in or around Nevada has ever had to rise to that level of proof. And honestly, they found a location in Nevada that was uninhabited for 150 miles. We had people living 8 miles away from Trinity Test Site.
And a lot of people in the history don't know that. So isn't it possible that having a national park could fill this gap?
Well, only if and only if the national park decides to engage us in that process and tell our story. I mean, the story of the science and industry has been told for 71 years without interruption, but they've never spoken about the sacrifices of the people living in and around the Trinity Test Site and Los Alamos, for that matter, and how we've been affected. I always say we've given everything we have to this effort. If you look at the history in those little towns, a lot of the women and children were home alone because their fathers were fighting in the Pacific, and we have nothing else to give. I mean, we've given our health. We put our family members, our community members, our friends into the ground over this. And honestly, I don't know how they can leave out our story. It would be beyond imagination that they would leave out this part of the history. And I think that to tell the story and, you know, to refine, like Tracy mentioned, they're planning to work with communities and refine the story. I don't see how they can tell the story and leave us out. It would be a huge mistake, I think, in and how this is, you know, how this is, the story is told. We're taxpayers. We're footing part of the bill for this process.
We have a number of calls. I want to go to Douglas in Los Alamos. Douglas, what is your comment or question?
Hello?
Hello, Douglas. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I don't have a question. I have a comment. I'm also a docent at our historical museum here. And basically, I think that, I mean, the Manhattan Project is a piece of history. There are people who thought it was indispensable. There are people who think the opposite. If you go around the world, you will find lots of museums like in Washington about the Holocaust. It's not a good thing. But we have museums. And this is an important part of the history of the 20th century, and also today, as Mr. Mello said. I mean, we still have one of the largest nuclear arsenals. I think this is a place, a good place for a museum. I would also point out my own view is Mr. Truman, as president, had no choice but to use those bombs in Japan. Okay. As horrific as it is, the war itself is horrific.
Okay. Douglas, I'm sorry, we have other calls, so I'm going to stop you right there, but I really appreciate you calling in and giving us your thoughts. I want to go to Miriam in Jemez Springs. Miriam, what's your question or comment?
My question is about economic priorities. I want to know why Los Alamos, who has benefited from federal dollars for several years, is one of the richest counties in the nation, gets money now for another park when New Mexico ranks so low in childhood poverty and in education in our nation. Why should $1 trillion go to more parks in Los Alamos rather than spending it on health priorities and education priorities and child poverty priorities for the state of New Mexico?
Okay, we need to take a break real quick, but we will be right back. This is the KUNM Call-In Show.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old accord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century donated to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. To find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It takes just a few minutes. That's 888-KUNM-CAR or 888-586-6227.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, Doctors Without Borders, serving the wounded and sick in conflict, disease, and disaster sites around the globe.
Working as a doctor in that part of Syria wasn't something that anyone wanted to do. People had been kidnapped. People had been imprisoned. Doctors had been killed. Doctors in particular were being targeted.
Behind the scenes with the 1999 Nobel Peace Prize winning Doctors Without Borders. Next time on Peace Talks Radio, Friday morning at 8 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick, and we're talking about the creation of the Manhattan Project National Historical Park. It was established last year in Los Alamos, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Hanford, Washington. And I have Tina Cordova here with the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Association. Tina, to the caller's last question about funding priorities, do you have some thoughts on that? Because, as you mentioned, the folks who live near the Trinity site have never received compensation.
Well, and when you ask the question, it's always that it's not a budget-neutral prospect and that there's no money for this. And that just relegates us to a position of nothingness. And absolutely, the question for me has always been, if we can set aside $1 trillion to, advance nuclear weapons, why in the world can't we carve out a few billion dollars to set up the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act for the people of New Mexico? I mean, I would have much rather seen the money that's been set aside for this national park to go for screening of people in these communities who, you know, are sick and dying. And so obviously the question has always been, carve out some money. How come we can't find funding for taking care of the people who were harmed when we can find money for the expansion of nuclear weapons? It's an obvious question. It should be asked, and that somebody should answer it.
We have another call from Don in Albuquerque. He has a question about exhibits. Don, are you there?
Yes. I strongly support what Greg Mello has said and what an earlier caller, Tom, said. And my question is, will there be in the exhibits any video of the Hibakusha, the Japanese survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, describing in detail what happened, the horrors that were experienced? And my favorite quote from Albert Einstein says, "More and more I've come to value charity and love of others above everything else. All our lauded technological progress, our very civilization, is like an axe in the hand pathological criminal."
Okay, thank you very much, Don, for those comments. Tracy Atkins, interim superintendent of the park until a new person stepped in this week. Quick question for you on that. The issue of editorial control over the narrative, as we say in journalism. So this is unusual because this is a joint sort of running of a park with the Department of Energy and the National Park Service. So tell us, explain for us in response to his question, who is deciding the narrative? Where does the DOE come in? Where do you guys come in?
Sure. So it's very clear that the DOE has responsibility for ensuring that anything that's related to the science and the technology is accurate and factual. The larger context of the interpretation and, you know, like, what is in that, what stories we tell, how we tell those stories, what media we use, that control rests within the Park Service.
So do you anticipate having an exhibit such as the one Don brought up about the survivors in Hiroshima?
It's, I'm certain that we will deal with the aspects of survivors, whether or not that's actually a video. It's way too early to make that determination. We'll be working on an interpretive plan over the next couple years, and in that we look at what are the audiences, what are the messages we want to deliver, and then what's the best media or different ways that, we can deliver those messages. So it's a little bit too early to say yes or no on that, but that part of the story is definitely an important piece to tell.
So it'll be part of the story, you're just not sure in what form it
Correct.
Will take. Okay. Heather with the Los Alamos Historical Society, Heather McClanahan, I was on a walking tour with several of your volunteers recently. Someone asked about the Trinity site and if it's still radioactive or dangerous, and the gentleman who's a former Labs employee, Lanel employee, kind of downplayed that idea, even implied that right after the blast, it wasn't too bad. I'm just curious if it's difficult to have these conversations in Los Alamos, because the labs are an enormous part of our economy in northern New Mexico.
It's really not difficult, and one of the reasons it's not is because it is an intellectual community, and there are people who are willing to challenge and ask questions. And, you know, if you go to Trinity, there are rangers out there, and one of my favorite things they do is they have a banana, which we mentioned earlier I had for breakfast, a piece of 1950s Fiesta ware, a smoke alarm, and a radium clock. And all of those things are more radioactive than a piece of trinitite. They have a little Geiger counter there to show that. So, you know, Trinity today is has a slightly higher, slightly higher elevated background levels than the rest of the world, because we did have above ground testing and that caused radiation all over the world. And so Trinity is not that much higher now than it was.
Well, actually, there's an interesting article in Popular Mechanics I'll post on the website about Kodak thousands of miles away finding out its film had been irradiated.
Right.
And they didn't, no one knew what the atomic blast was in 1945. So clearly it had far reaching.
It did.
Impacts.
And certainly, you know, they did not know at the time the extent of the effects. In fact, one of the things that happened after the war was several scientists from Los Alamos went to Hiroshima, to Nagasaki, and they did measurements. I mean, you hate to take a human tragedy like that and talk about it as a science experiment, but it was where a lot of information came in and a lot was learned about radiation after the fact. And so at Trinity itself, you know, right after the blast, there were guys walking out there with paper booties on and those sorts of things, because they didn't really understand the effects.
Greg, go ahead, Tracy. I'm sorry.
Those health studies continue to today in Japan.
But they haven't done any health studies here in the Tularosa Basin, which I know is not your purview as a National Park Service, but is that – these are sort of stories that I see that we have had a lot of stories in many formats so far about Los Alamos in particular, but there are hidden stories we haven't told. So is that something that we can entrust the National Park Service to delve into?
Yeah, I think as much as people want to dive into the stories, we can have information available. So, you know, there's going to be some people that come and, you know, they're going to be done in, you know, 20 minutes or an hour. And then there's other people that are going to want to dive much deeper. And we will have sort of information at all of those levels.
Greg, why are you skeptical that we can promote a more robust dialogue with a national park around
this? Well, let's take even this discussion of health effects. Go back to the Castle Bravo test in the Pacific, an enormous nuclear test, miscalculation by Los Alamos. The yield was 2.5 times more than was expected. Fallout blanketed the northern hemisphere. The levels in Europe were very, very high. Levels across the U.S. were very high. There was more fallout. There was as much fallout from that test as all the other tests put together. And do we know this today? No. Do we know that the above-ground testing program probably killed hundreds of thousands of people around the world? No. Do we know that the carbon-14 put into the atmosphere will have a long-term effect, mortality over hundreds and actually thousands of years to come, assuming there are people? Sakharov did these calculations in the 50s. He went to confronted Khrushchev, who put him down, but except for that he was able to bring the yield of the Tsar Bomba down from 100 megatons to 50, because he knew exactly what the long-term mortality from it would be. We will not get those stories out. We will not – we'll have a sort of a modified, limited hangout, I think was the phrase used during the Watergate period. And the actual naked power aspects of nuclear weapons and their use even up to today in conditioning the American political system and our foreign policy will remain, quote, complex and too difficult for the layperson to understand and really a matter of entertainment. And it'll be depoliticized and we will be left with confusion and a pro-veteran narrative which fits in with our rampant militarism that is infecting our society right now and leading us toward a violent future.
I want to go to our callers. We have Chris in Santa Fe. You wanted to talk about the Cold War and technology.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think it's vitally important that we have a robust discussion about nuclear weapons because I regard their development and the Cold War that followed as probably the single most significant historical event shaping the 20th century and now even affecting the early history of the 21st century. What I'm struck by is the irony of the fact that we are able to have this conversation because of the technological development that created the little boy weapon. The reason we have semiconductors today was because that technology was later extended to semiconductor manufacturing, enabling us to better communicate this. So that's my comment.
Tracy, this is it's an interesting comment because we have gotten advances in all kinds of ways that are immoral or we would rather not have done. Can the National Park take that on and look at that sort of duality of horrible things done that yet brought about great advancements in technology or other aspects?
I think that we can. It will be a challenge. I mean, certainly we have, you know, obviously, you know, medical health impacts, technology that came out of, you know, this project, as well as, you know, power sources, even including the power source for the probe that just went to Pluto. So a wide range of technology that's benefited the world, but also obviously, you know, significant consequences. I go back to this, you know, the signing ceremony with Secretary Jewell, and she spoke about the need to learn from our past to shape a brighter future. And I think that is the challenge that we have, is to share those lessons learned from this project, from the Manhattan Project, but also challenge visitors to think about the consequences and how we can do better in the future.
I want to go to Geraldine in Albuquerque. She said her dad worked on the bomb and died of cancer. Geraldine, are you with us?
Yes, I am. My father was a physicist he worked on research that was funded by the AAC, the Atomic Energy Commission, which is now the DOD. He was studying the blast effects of nuclear weapons, and he was sent to the bomb tests in Nevada and in the South Pacific and in Australia, or in that area. He was a very healthy man, never sick a day in his life. He got cancer when he was 51 and died a horrible, horrible, agonizing death. And after that, I found out a few years later that there were many other victims of the bomb tests, including hundreds of thousands of soldiers who were deployed in conjunction with the bomb tests because they were trying to find out how to use ground troops in conjunction with nuclear weapons. And the government at that time was refusing to compensate those soldiers because they said there was no proof that their cancers and their children's birth defects had anything to do with the exposure. But they fought for getting some kind of compensation, and they finally did, I think. And I was told that there were more people who died as a result of the bomb tests of our people than died as a result of the bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So I'm just putting that out there. And I would like to see that be part of the story. And I also would like to find out if there's any way that my family could get some compensation, because my children didn't get to have a grandfather, et cetera. I wanted to add my voice to that then, to let people know that there's a whole range of other people who were impacted by the bomb testing.
Thank you very much for your comment, Geraldine. And I wanted to ask you, Tracy, she wanted to make sure those stories are part of it. What are the opportunities for input as this park is evolving for community members and for others and people like Tina and the groups, people she represents near the Trinity site? How can they do that?
So later this summer, probably early fall, we'll share our draft interpretive themes. We'll have the summary of that foundation document will be on our website. We'll send out press releases. We'll allow people to comment on that. And then also next fall, our intent is to have, again, workshops, which will probably be a day or two, in each of the three communities to start building take from our 30,000-foot high-level interpretive themes down to more detail and how we tell those stories in each of the communities. And so that will be an opportunity for individuals either in person, or we'll have a way people can, send us electronic comments as well.
And probably, so they can go to the...
Probably this fall, after we get a permanent superintendent selected, that process will move forward a little bit more quickly.
So this will be mostly submitting written comments. Will there be any more meetings or community forums?
We will have meetings.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll probably try to have some daytime and evening meetings so that, depending on people's schedules, they'll have that flexibility.
Okay. That was Tracy Atkins, who's interim superintendent with the National Park Service. Greg, quick final thought.
Sure. I just want to say that the idea that the Manhattan Project created all these technological achievements, I think, is false. I think it's a propaganda theme.
Okay.
I don't think that's factual.
Okay. You can find links to a number of articles and to our group, our guests' websites at the KUNM Call-In Show website at KUNM.org. I want to thank my guests for joining us on the KUNM Call-In Show today. Tracy Atkins of the Manhattan Project National Historical Park, Heather McClenahan with the Los Alamos Historical Society, Senator Martin Heinrich, Tina Cordova of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Association, Greg Mello with the Los Alamos Study Group. Thank you to our callers and those who sent emails and tweets. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous call-in shows. We've also posted links to the Manhattan Project Park and articles, and we'll be updating that. Thanks to Jefferson White. He was our engineer today. Kaveh Movahed was our producer today, and Anna Landy live-tweeted the show. Rashad Mahmood screened your calls. Our executive producer is Elaine Baumgartel. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thank you for joining us and participating in the discussion here on KUNM on the Call-In Show. Thank you very much.